Now it is time to visit with today's Pet Talk guest, author, and so much more, Lori Kaplan. Lori, thank you for joining us for today's Pet Talk program.
Oh, Jean, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we've got you turned up all the way, and you're still coming in very faintly, so you might want to talk just as loud as you can, Lori.
Okay, I will try to do that.
And I want to tell you, Lori, I'm sitting here in my Help Your Dog Fight Cancer shirt that you gave me 3 years ago. So.
Fabulous, so am I.
It is a gorgeous shirt, and it's got the picture of Bullet, who you'll hear more about later here.
Yes, it really strikes me when I'm out and about and I see someone wearing Bullet on their chest. It's really a little shocking, but it's great.
And it doesn't hurt quite as much as it used to, I would imagine.
That's true. I'm getting used to it.
Listeners, if you have any questions or comments for Lori during today's program, you can call us at 524-6000 or 1-877-531-1310. Judy or Tara will write down your question, bring it to us, and we'll answer it for you on the air. If we don't answer it to your satisfaction, please give us a call back and give us more information so we can give you a better answer. So if you have any questions or comments for Lori Kaplan, give us a call. Those numbers again, 524-6000 or 1-877-531-1310. Lori, before we begin discussing Help Your Dog Fight Cancer and the Magic Bullet Fund, please introduce yourself to our listeners by telling them a bit about your educational background, prior careers, and more about just who you are.
Okay, we'll be happy to do that. I started out majoring in college in Ripon, Wisconsin, at English Literature. I went back and forth between pre-vet and English Lit several times. I was just torn between a career helping animals medically and a career in writing. And as you can see, these two separate interests have finally merged and come together for me through Bullet and my writing about dogs and cancer. After I graduated college in English Lit, I went back to school. I went to graduate school at UConn, which is the University of Connecticut, and I was taking animal pathobiology so that I could go to vet school. I worked as a surgical assistant at a vet clinic for a year and decided no, I actually hadn't made a mistake. I did want to pursue a career in writing. And then in my writing, I sort of wandered back to veterinary medicine field. As far as side careers, I have a master's in counseling. Which actually comes into play a great deal in dealing with pet loss issues these days. And I also had a career in developing computer software.
You've done just a few things, right?
A few things, yes. I feel a little scattered, but they all do fit together somehow.
And it hasn't been all just dogs, because for a while you were editor of the Catnip magazine, right?
Yes, absolutely. I actually was all cats, so to speak, until 1992, when I found Bullet sitting at my local shelter. Until that point, I had all cats, I think 15, 16 cats over the years. I still do have one kitty sitting right here helping me conduct this interview named Tiptoe. But yeah, I was the cat lady, and then somehow I became the dog lady.
And you also help out at your own local shelter. You started a program there, didn't you?
I did start a program in 1999, 2000. I got together with four other terrific women, and we got a volunteer program going where volunteers come in and walk the dogs and do a little bit of training and prepare them for adoption.
And that's something all shelter animals could use.
Oh, absolutely. The adoption rate has at least doubled since we did that program.
And in 2004, you did publish the first edition of Help Your Dog Fight Cancer, right?
Yes, I did. I'm just coming out with the second edition, which should go to the printer in a week. I'm praying. I want it off my desk.
You've looked at it long enough now?
Yes. It's easy to just keep fiddling, and at some point you have to let it go. So next week is my deadline.
Okay. And you are the founder and the administrator of the Magic Bullet Fund, which we'll talk more about later, and you're a member of the Dog Writers Association of America, right?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. And you might explain to our listeners just a little bit what that is.
The Dog Writers Association of America, it's a terrific organization. It's a place to share resources and ideas and generally give a lot of support to other people who are writing in the field. A lot of the members are trainers, but some are also medically oriented, as I am. And some just write terrific dog stories. So it's really the whole spectrum of anyone who writes about dogs.
And if some of you listeners are out there thinking, hey, this sounds familiar, you're right. Longtime Pet Talk listeners might, if I can talk, may just remember that Lori was my guest 3 years ago when we first discussed the book, Help Your Dog Fight Cancer. Since that program in 2005, some treatments have changed and new discoveries have been made in fighting canine cancer. Organizations such as the Morris Animal Foundation, whose president Dr. Patty Olson was our guest back in July, have committed to research concentrated on curing canine cancer. And Lori has also continued to play a part. Not only is the second edition of Help Your Dog Fight Cancer about ready to be printed, as she said, but as I said earlier, Lori also organized and edited a veterinary textbook, Canine and Feline Geriatric Oncology, with Dr. Alice Villalobos. In addition, the Magic Bullet Fund, which she founded after her dog Bullet's death, continues to grow. And you're going to hear us talk about that and how the Magic Bullet Fund, you can help it and it can help others. So, Lori, tell our listeners just a little bit about your Siberian Husky, Magic Bullet, who was the inspiration for your book.
Well, I came across Bullet at my local shelter, the same shelter where I helped to start the volunteer program, and the same shelter where I guess I've adopted at least 6 cats from there and a couple of other dogs since Bullet. You know, I had no intentions of having a dog. I was really entrenched in the cat world. But I went to the shelter on my way to a tennis game. It was right next door. And I handed out biscuits often. And one day I went there and saw him, put him in my car, and took him home. it was a totally unplanned event. It was an accident, you could say. And my entire life changed at that point with Bullet. I had no idea just the rewards involved in having a dog.
You might tell us how he got his name.
Bullet got his name because of his constant need to run away. If I dropped the leash for one split second, he would be 2 miles away before I even knew I dropped the leash. And this is actually something that's standard behavior for a Siberian Husky, which I wasn't aware of when I first put him in my car and took him home. But it's just something, you know, you run into people who have Siberian Huskies and they say, you don't ever let them loose, do you?
It's just that way, right?
You just can't trust them at all for a second. It's in their nature, they're gone. You
know? And something that I found fascinating in your book 3 years ago and again was Bullet got you into knitting. You might just briefly mention how Bullet did that.
Yes, I would love to. I am not a knitter at all by nature, but when I would brush Bullet, there's just this huge volume of fur would come out of him, and I didn't have the heart to throw it away for some reason.
That's
I just stashed it away in leaf bags, and I had a spine surgery at one point. I was going to be rehabilitating, limited to no activity for a while, and I got my mom to come over and show me how to knit so that I could start doing something with all this beautiful fur I had collected. And I now have a couple of sweaters, a couple of vests, a scarf, and I actually have some slippers out of Bullet's fur.
And I understand that husky fur is quite nice for that sort of thing. It looks like mohair.
It does. It fuzzes up just like mohair. And it is so warm, I ended up taking the sleeves off a couple of sweaters because they were so warm I couldn't even wear them indoors. So now they're vests.
And unfortunately, in 2000, you felt some enlarged glands in Bullet's neck, right?
I did, yes. I was petting him, massaging him, and my hand just felt a swelling in his neck, right where you would feel if you think you have a sore throat. you put your hand on either side below your jaw, the lymph nodes there, and they were swollen, and we went into the vet. At first it was diagnosed as allergies, and Bullitt took some antihistamines for a week or two. They didn't go down, and that was when my doctor, Dr. Bruce Hoskins at the Croton Animal Clinic, discovered that he did have lymphoma.
You point out in the beginning of Help Your Dog Fight Cancer that approximately half of our dogs will have cancer in their lifetimes. You originally wrote the book because most of us know very little or nothing about caring for a dog with cancer, and if our dog is diagnosed with cancer, we're going to need a lifeline and guidance for their care. And when Bullitt was diagnosed, you discovered there wasn't much of that information easily available. So if you would, please give our listeners a quick overview of what kind of information is in your book, Help Your Dog Fight Cancer.
Okay, the type of information is, there are several different areas. One is how to approach it medically, how to speak to your vet. It gives readers a good background basis of cancer in general and what types of diagnostic tests are done for various types of cancer and what sort of treatments are available. And it really educates them so that they can go into their vet with intelligent questions and not need the vet to give them the entire spectrum of information about canine cancer. So they go in feeling more confident and intelligent and capable of making decisions, of going over all the treatment options with their vet, all the test options. There are many, many tests, and you don't just give carte blanche like, okay, do every test in the world. You can decide, pick and choose which tests are necessary, which tests are going to help your dog, and which are really superfluous. And when it comes to making treatment decisions, of course, your vet is very helpful, but you can also gather a lot of information from my book to help you decide. And there are support groups online now that are very, very helpful for people. To help at every stage.
Do you have the web addresses of some of those support groups that you can give us later on?
I do, yes.
Okay.
I absolutely do. If you remind me, I will read those off.
Okay.
It gets information about within the treatment section, it gets information about surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. These are the main treatments that are available for cancer. And some of the treatments that are in development, and really there's a very, very strong parallel to canine cancer and human cancer treatment. There are very few differences in chemotherapy. The treatment that they give to dogs is virtually the same, but it is less aggressive. People just can't stand to watch their dogs die of treatment. They may be willing themselves to almost die in order to survive, but nobody wants to watch their dog die from treatment, so the treatments are less aggressive, so that the side effects will in most cases, be minimal. The book also covers a lot about diet and supplements, very, very important to do these things to support your dog going through cancer treatment, is to give him a healthy diet that fights cancer instead of feeding it. There's a whole chapter on that with a color section, just like a cookbook, saying step one, step two, here's how you make the diet. This is Bullitt's cancer diet, which obviously was successful for him. And then there's a chapter on supplements. You have to support the immune system. You need to strengthen every organ in the body because chemotherapy and radiation therapy can be destructive. So you need to provide extra reinforcement for the dog as a whole, the holistic aspect. And this is how supplements help the dog to fight cancer and to survive the treatment.
And the book is really a guide to living with and caring for and loving a dog with cancer, right? The whole book?
Yes, it is. It is. And I try not to miss anything, so it's really, really chock full.
And you have a new last chapter containing some information, and I still am wrapping my tongue around the palate, and I still can't say it today, Lori.
Okay, you're looking for palliative care.
Yes, and for some reason, I couldn't say it yesterday when I talked to Lori, and my tongue will not spit it out today for some reason. But that's what her last chapter is about, and about ending it, correct? Because there comes a time?
Yes, it is. There does always come a time, yes. And it's a very tough time. It's tougher, I think, in one way, it's tougher when it's a pet that you're losing because there's a tremendous element of guilt involved. We are so responsible for making that decision that it's our we're empowered to make that decision, which is wonderful, so that we can prevent our pets from suffering at the end of their lives. But it also leaves us with a big element of guilt that we walk around with because we did make that decision. You know, no one forced us to. Sometimes the vet will push us in that direction, but it's really our decision in the end, and then we have to live with having made that decision. And at first, I speak to many, many people who have been through this, and there is always tremendous guilt involved in having made the decision. And then in time, it comes forth in your emotional being that this is something you did as a gift to your dog.
And we'll be talking more about that. It is time for us to take our first break. We are visiting today with Lori Kaplan, author of Help Your Dog Fight Cancer. Lori and I are discussing not only her book, which offers a lifeline to the pet owner embarking on that bittersweet journey of caring for and nurturing a beloved pet who's been diagnosed with cancer, but we'll also be discussing the Magic Bullet Fund, which helps those dogs diagnosed with cancer receive the care they deserve. If you have questions for Lori or wish to comment, please give us a call. The phone numbers are 524-6000. Or 1-877-531-1310.
The Critchell Animal Hospital at 1912 Main Street in Keokuk pride themselves in treating your pet like it was their own. As a member of the American Animal Hospital Association, they strive to maintain the highest standards of veterinary care. With a combined 110 years of veterinary experience, since 1932, generations have trusted their pets' care and boarding with Critchell Animal Hospital. 1912 Main Street in Keokuk. Call 524-6835.
Welcome back to Pet Talk. My guest today is Lori Kaplan, author of Help Your Dog Fight Cancer. Lori and I are discussing not only her book, but also information from Canine and Feline Geriatric Oncology, the veterinary textbook she organized and edited. We're also discussing the Magic Bullet Fund, which works with a dog's caretaker and veterinarian to ensure that the dogs receive the treatment they need. If you have questions or comments for Lori, please give us a call at 524-6000 or 1-877-531-1310. Lori, we should probably point out that you are not a veterinarian and cannot give veterinary advice, but you can tell us what we need to be aware of and understand if we're going to get that dreaded news that our dog has cancer, correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct, yes.
And Lori, let's talk a little bit about what are the most prevalent canine cancers.
The number one cancer is what they call lumps and bumps. This is cutaneous and subcutaneous cancers. Predominantly, this includes canine malignant melanoma and mast cell cancer and all sorts of soft tissue sarcomas, and it's generalized as lumps and bumps. This is something that you can discover just by massaging or petting your dog all the way down under the fur, right down to the skin. Give them a nice massage, and if you discover any bumps there that should not be there, your vet should definitely take a look at it. The second most common cancer is mammary cancer, which is on the decline thanks to spay and neuter. The incidence of mammary cancer drops to something like 1 or 2% when a pet is spayed or neutered.
And that should be done prior to even their first heat cycle, right?
It should be done very early, yes. They're doing pediatric spay and neuter now, and they're having good results with it very early, but certainly before 5 months of age. The third most common cancer is lymphoma, which is what my boy Bullet has. And this is very common. You see this an awful lot. You hear about it because It's a cancer that it is very, very aggressive. It is terminal. However, it also responds very well to treatment. So very many of the people I speak to, even though it's only the third most common cancer, I speak to people probably, most of the people I speak to who have dogs with cancer are dealing with lymphoma. And then beyond that, there's a high incidence of osteosarcoma, especially with the larger breed dogs, large and giant breed. This is bone cancer. And also hemangiosarcoma, which is a blood cancer, which is very, very difficult to treat with any success.
I know it's almost an impossible question to answer, but why do our dogs get cancer? What did you find out when you researched your book, and what's been discovered since then?
There are a number of factors that have been identified as precursors to cancer developing. One, as we discussed, is spay and neuter. If you spay and neuter, well, it's not a cause, but it's a way to avoid it. Chemicals are probably the main cause, and I would say that lawn chemicals are the worst offender because of the fact that putting these chemicals on your lawn may not affect you. You walk on them, you take your shoes off, you go inside, but your dog goes inside and licks his feet after walking on these chemicals. The insecticides and herbicides are very toxic, so organic lawn care products are the best, good way to protect your pets, and if your neighbors are using the store-bought chemical lawn treatments, I would try to keep my dog off their lawns as best as I can. Carpet cleaning, house cleaning products also have a lot of chemicals. You have to read the label and be very careful about what you put down. If you mop the floor with a harsh chemical, be sure to rinse, re-rinse, mop it with water, get all the chemicals off because your pet is going to be walking on that floor and licking your paws. Then we have vaccines. The vaccines are actually most dangerous for cats. There's vaccine-associated sarcomas, which are very difficult to treat. That's not found as much in dogs, but there's a fear that there is a component of the vaccines that does cause cancer. And then there's, of course, the genetic factors. Certain types of cancer are more prevalent in certain breeds. And some work is being done, some studies are being done to find out what genes are causing those cancers, but we're years from actually having that information. Secondhand smoke is found to cause lymphoma in cats and nasal cancers in dogs because they have that lung snout that the carcinogens can get stuck in and create tumors.
And interestingly, obesity is also a cause, isn't it?
Obesity is a cause of cancer. Now, that's new to me. Tell me about that.
I just was reading that it, on the canine bladder cancer, obesity is one of the causative factors.
Okay, well, I'm going to go do my homework after this call.
I believe I was reading that, and I'm not sure, but on the website, this month is Canine Obesity Month. Awareness Month, and so I believe of.
Well, Dean, the number one thing is lumps and bumps. That is just the easiest discovery of cancer is finding a lump on your dog. Go to the vet, or your cat, go to the vet, and it should be aspirated with a fine needle aspirate. Can be done without anesthesia right there on your appointment time. It takes like 2 seconds, and if necessary, it can be sent out to the lab to say whether it's cancer or not and possibly what type of cancer it is. Most times it is not. Fatty tumors are very common, but every lump and bump should be checked out because obviously early detection is the best way to treat a cancer successfully. If you have a dog that continuously develops a lot of fatty tumors, you still should check each one just with a fine needle aspirate. You don't need to do a surgical biopsy, but they should all be checked. Even fatty tumors can become malignant after time. Another sign you should look for is weight loss. If you see your dog is losing weight for no apparent reason, eating normally but losing weight, this could be an indicator of cancer or of another illness. And always keep an eye on your dog's eating and drinking habits, defecating, urinating. These things are real clues and red flags if something is outside of your dog's ordinary behavior. This is something to look into. And, you know, watch his breathing, energy level. If you're out, if you do hiking with your dog and suddenly he's not able to go half the distance he used to, this, you know, a lot of people attribute it to age. My dog's aging. That's why he can't go as far. And this may be the case, but if it comes on suddenly, then you need to look into medical reasons for your dog's loss of energy. You know, any sores on the body that are bleeding and don't heal, this is a reason to take your dog to your vet. And that about covers it. I would say lumps and bumps are the biggest one. Just massage your dog as often as you can. He'll love it. You'll love it. And you'll just make sure there are no lumps that shouldn't be there.
And sometimes, since it is dental month too, but bad breath can also be a sign of either dental problems or some cancers too, can't it?
Absolutely, yes. Especially oral or nasal cancers, yes.
So we should basically look for lumps, look at our skin of our dog, check the activity level, check eating, weight loss, any of those things we should really pay attention to, correct?
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm.
And if we're concerned about some of these signs, but our veterinarian wants to watch and wait and see what happens, should we get a second opinion or should we continue to wait and watch?
Well, that's an interesting question. If you are confident with your vet, if you have no qualms about what your vet is advising, then you probably do not need a second opinion. If you have a feeling that something more is wrong with your dog than what your vet is finding, absolutely get a second opinion. Yes. The second opinion is also important after a diagnosis of cancer. There are many, many vets who do provide cancer treatment. There are only about 200 veterinary oncologists in the country. There are millions of dogs with cancer and only 200 veterinary oncologists. So as a result, many general practice vets do provide cancer treatment. And if your dog is diagnosed, it's fine for a general practice vet to provide treatment. If you have any qualms about how this treatment is going, you can ask your vet to have a consultation with an oncologist. You can get a second opinion from an oncologist. If your oncologist is far away, you can have an appointment and set that oncologist up as a consultant and continue to have your general practice vet provide treatment.
If our dog is diagnosed with cancer, the first thing we probably feel is shock and dread, and we may even begin looking at our dog differently, and probably we even start to grieve. But in your book, you say we need to remain positive for our dog, right?
Yes, we do. We do. It helps them, and it helps us get through the roller coaster ride as well. It helps them because, you know, our dogs are so tuned into our emotions. And if we walk around the house crying and with a long face, very sad, our dog's going to wonder what they did wrong. What did they do to turn over the apple cart and make us so unhappy? And they, you know, in most cases, they are not ill when the cancer is first discovered, especially something like lymphoma or a lump in the body. They don't know it's malignant and going to spread. They feel absolutely fine. They want to go out, run around, do their normal activities, and we have to be right there with them, normal life. Even when they're in cancer treatment, you know, they may have some down periods, they may have side effects, but they bounce back. And then it's back to normal life and keeping a stiff upper lip and just keep going through the process and, you know, watch for signs of side effects. But as long as things are good, then That's it. Things are good. Just stay up with it.
Enjoy what you've got, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
On your website, HelpYourDogFightCancer.com, you have a list of 10 tips of what we need to do if our dog is diagnosed with cancer. Please tell us about those tips and why each of those are important.
Okay, the first tip on the list, and the website is at www.HelpYourDogFightCancer.com for anyone to see. The first tip is to assemble a team. When you have a dog with cancer, you need a vet who's going to provide treatment for the cancer. I also recommend having a holistic vet who can get a supplement and diet regimen going for you and make sure that the collection of supplements you're giving your dog aren't contraindicated from the treatment he's getting or with each other. Some of the supplements don't react well with each other. The team can also include an oncologist and any other sort of specialist that is indicated. You know, if your dog has ocular cancer, you obviously need an eye doctor as well. And all of your team members should be aware of what everyone else is doing. You know, whether or not they keep each other informed is one thing, but you need to keep a log, which I'm actually skipping down to 10 tip number 3 here. You need to keep a log with all of the information about your dog's treatments, which doctors you've been to, and what treatment they provided, whether your dog had side effects from it, because down the line, when it can get complicated, when other issues come into it, when you have concurrent illnesses, you know, and most of the dogs, cancer is generally a geriatric disease. Most of the dogs are elderly, and many of them have other conditions going on. So just keeping straight which doctors you saw, which medicines he took, how he responded to them. If your dog's in chemo, to keep track of which chemotherapy agents were given on what days and what his reactions were. And as I was saying, your holistic vet can help you keep all of the medications and supplements straight so that everything comes together to fight the cancer and
not interact with each other, right?
Exactly, exactly, yeah. Okay. And number 2, which I skipped over, is to arm yourself with information. This includes reading books like my book and other books in the field, and researching on the internet, and being sure to ask vets questions. We should not just allow the vet to make all our decisions for us. If your vet knows that you are interested in participating in your dog's treatments and contributing, then your vet will be more inclined to share more information with you and say, well, there were 3 different ways we can go with this treatment and discuss them with you, and you will choose what you want for your dog, because really you are the one who knows your dog better than anyone. So these decisions are yours in the end.
Okay. We're going to have to keep moving through them so that we don't run out of time here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Number 4 is to make changes slowly. This is with diet, with surroundings, if you need to change where your dog sleeps or anything about your dog's life, to do it slowly, a little bit at a time. Then you need to keep your dog in tip-top condition while he's in cancer treatment, because the cancer and the treatment can both be debilitating. You need to check teeth, sores, any elbow sores on the body, make sure there are no infections brewing anywhere, check the nails, everything. There's a whole list in the section called Whole Health in my book where it tells you what systems, what parts of the body, what bodily functions are susceptible when a dog has cancer and is going through treatment. Then you need to have a good diet. Nutrition is very important to keep your dog strong. You need to provide good supplements. Be prepared for anything. Have a gurney available if you have a large dog that you can't carry in your arms to your car. Have a plan how you're going to get him, for example, down the stairs if he can't walk, how you're going to get him in the car, what clinic you're going to go to if there's an emergency in the middle of the night. Number 8 is to keep an open mind. be open to chiropractic, Reiki, acupuncture. There are alternative therapies that do help. At least give them a try, see if they help your dog or not. And number nine is to remain cheerful and loving, which we talked about. We want your dog to have a happy life. He's ill, but he doesn't know he's ill, only you know. And finally, number 10 is to trust your judgment. Don't second-guess yourself. Make decisions. You can always change them, but don't blame yourself, I should have or I shouldn't have. Just make your best decision and move on.
Make that decision and make sure you think it's the right one, but make it, right?
Absolutely, yes.
As we said earlier, Help Your Dog Fight Cancer has so much information in it, and we really have so little time today that we don't have time to cover it all. There's information about the various medical interventions, as Lori said, the chemotherapy, its side effects, and various diets and supplements that may help your dog. And your book has the section, too, as we mentioned, about keeping your dog in the tip-top condition while he or she is fighting cancer. Is there anything you quickly want to say about some of that information maybe that we haven't covered before we discuss the magic bullet fund, which I do want to spend a few minutes on?
Jean, I think we did cover everything that I had wanted to.
Okay. And the last chapter of the book is entitled, the new last chapter, From Warriors to Angels. It starts with a question. Can you ask that question of us and explain things for us a little more?
Wait, you got me here.
Okay, the new last chapter of your book. At what exact moment does treatment end? And there we go again. Palliative care. How
palliative
did I do?
Care.
Care begins. For some reason,
yes.
Listeners, I can't spit out that word. And please explain for us what that kind of care is and also what hospice care is.
Right, okay. Hospice care and palliative care are really pretty much the same thing. Palliative care means that you are no longer fighting the cancer. You're still trying to slow it down and trying to give your dog the best quality of life you can during this end phase, but you're saying we are in the end phase, we're not fighting it anymore. The cancer is going to progress, and we're just going to keep the dog happy and comfortable and as healthy as we can until that moment comes when it's time to stop. And that all depends on quality of life. So how do you know when palliative care begins? There really is no answer to that. You know, it depends on you. It depends on your dog. You need to keep a close eye on your dog. And when you see your dog doesn't have any fight in him anymore, when you see your dog's going through side effects that are not resolving, that go on and on, you have to think about whether or not it's time to stop treatment and just make the end as the absolute most happiest time of your dog's life.
And as you point out in that last chapter, which I got a sneak preview of, listeners, as you say, the animal will let you know, your dog will let you know when it is time.
Yes, you know, people ask me all the time, very nervously, how will I know? I'm going to miss it. I'm not going to end it in time, and my dog's going to have terrible pain. And I always tell people, you will absolutely know. If you are bonded with your dog, if you have that bond going on, you can look in your dog's eyes and know that's it. He's done fighting, and he's in pain.
And there's no way to explain that to anybody, because in my job with the animal services, I run into that too. But there's no way to explain it, but you do know. And it is the last great gift you can give your animal.
Absolutely, yes.
We cannot end today's program discussing the Magic Bullet Fund and the Brave Spirits calendar. Please tell us what the Magic Bullet Fund is, what it does, and its new affiliation with iMom.
Okay, the Magic Bullet Fund is a nonprofit that I started when I published the first edition of the book. I wanted someplace to donate a portion of proceeds. I could not find any nonprofit that actually provides treatment. There are a lot that are going to cure cancer or research cancer, but I actually wanted to get some dogs into treatment where their caretakers couldn't afford it. So I founded the Magic Bullet Fund. We have so far helped, I believe it's 26 dogs through treatment. in 2 years. We have just recently hooked up with an organization called iMom. This is a fabulous organization. They've been around 9 years. They help, it's similar, they help people who have dogs with various illnesses and injuries, need treatment, and their caretakers can't afford the vet bills. And they have a group of wonderful, generous supporters who come in to sponsor a particular dog's treatment. Recently, they called me at the Magic Bullet Fund to say they were having a lot of applications for cancer treatment. It's very different because most of the cases they help are one-shot deals. The dog has a surgery, and now he's okay. He can go on with his life. But in cancer treatment, it sort of goes on and on. The dog goes in remission. It comes back. It's not a quick fix. And she, Jackie Hadra is the person who runs iMom. She asked if the Magic Bullet Fund could sort of collaborate with them on cancer cases. So there is now a section of iMom called the Magic Bullet Fund, and that's where all the cancer cases are going to go. They pass through the Magic Bullet Fund first. I have to review applications, accept dogs into the program, and then iMom will read about them and say, yes, we will take this dog into iMom as well, or in some cases they can't. So for a lot of the dogs from this point forward, we will have both organizations working to help them through treatment.
And tell us what the Brave Spirit calendar is.
The Brave Spirits calendar,
which my listeners have heard me mention many times.
This is the, let's see, the first one came out in 2005. That was produced by a woman named Amber Hollers in Portland, Oregon, for her dog Lucy, who had bone cancer. She had an amputation. She did not have follow-up chemo. She survived about a year, I believe, maybe 10 months or a year, which was a good survival. And Amber produced this calendar with 12 different dogs who had bone cancer. Some had amputations, some didn't. And the caretaker tells the dog's story on the top section, the top half of the calendar. The bottom half, of course, is the monthly grid. And Amber has not done the calendar since then, but she sort of turned it over to the Magic Bullet Fund. So it is now a Magic Bullet Fund calendar that we put out every year. And it has 12 different Magic Bullet Fund dogs. The caretakers tell their stories, and there are beautiful pictures of these beautiful dogs. And it's also, the calendar is loaded with a lot of information about canine cancer, about the different types of cancer. It's not too medical or technical because it's really a wall calendar.
Susie is sitting here looking at the calendar right now as we speak. Through the Magic Bullet Fund and by purchasing the Brave Spirits calendar, each of us can help provide that cancer treatment for the dogs diagnosed with cancer. Tell us quickly how we can learn more and help with the funds for the Magic Bullet Fund.
Okay. The Magic Bullet Fund website is themagicbulletfund.org, and it also links with the book's website, which is helpyourdogfightcancer.com. On every page of each website, you can click over to the other. And you can help by donating. If you see a dog who's in treatment in the Magic Bullet Fund and you want to help, you can make a donation right there. You can buy T-shirts that have a big, beautiful picture of Bullet and say, Fight Canine Cancer. You can buy T-shirts to help the fund. There's pet cancer awareness jewelry. We have earrings, necklaces, and lapel pins. All of these things are sponsored by corporations, and the proceeds, if you purchase these things to wear them around and raise awareness for us, you are also donating to help these dogs who need treatment.
And quickly, if our listeners would like a copy of your book, where can they find it and how can they purchase it?
They can find the book at helpyourdogfightcancer.com. They can purchase it right there on the website. They can call 914-941-0159. We don't take credit cards over the phone, but on the website you can order with any credit card, and you can order by sending a check. But if you give us a call, we'll take you through the various ways to order the book. It's also available on Amazon.com, and it's in many libraries, public libraries across the country. On the first page of the website, helpyourdogfightcancer.com, you can click to look up whether it's in one of your local libraries or not.
And it would be a wonderful book to donate to your library if they don't have it.
Absolutely. Yes, I donated them to my local library.
Lori, we're running quickly out of time. I know you're working on another book. Please just quickly give us your working title, because that's about all we have time for.
Okay, the new book actually comes from the new last chapter in this book. The new book is called So Easy to Love, So Hard to Lose, and it is all about pet loss. It's about palliative care and ending decisions of euthanasia and then burial or cremation, and many suggestions on how to get through that grief period, which is so painful and difficult.
And one of the things you and I have talked about several times is don't listen to those people who say, hey, it's only a dog, what's your problem, right?
Absolutely don't listen, and don't try to sway them. Don't try to argue with them, because you're only going to end up getting more frustrated. You're not going to change how they think about it.
But you might want to avoid them for a while until you feel that you can deal with them, because it's not just a dog or just a cat. It's part of our family, right?
They are family members, absolutely, yes.
Lori, thank you so much for being my guest on today's Pet Talk program. I hope our listeners feel they've learned a bit more about canine cancer, what kind of warning signals that they need to be watching for, how they can help their dog if he or she is diagnosed with cancer, and how they can help those whose dogs have cancer through the Magic Bullet Fund.
Yes, this is something every dog caretaker needs to know about, since 50% of our dogs will have cancer.
We are way past time, but Susie said that's okay, but if you'd stay on the line, I want to talk to you a minute after we go off the air.
Okay, thank you so much for having me, Dana.
Thank you again, Lori. Our next pet...